I bet you didn't know that the teaching of Latin in schools is making a comeback. Latin? Really? Isn't that a dead language? Well, take a look at what studies say about how well Latin students do on a test like the SAT. Memoria Press's Latin program will revolutionize your students' vocabulary, knowledge, and their understanding of grammar. And there is no better subject for teaching critical thinking skills. Visit MemoriaPress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. A Washington Post story reads the headline, "The United Methodist Church has appointed a transgender deacon." That's not unexpected. It's not surprising, although I imagine it is shocking and disconcerting to some in the United Methodist Church. We're going to be talking about this transgender deacon, M. Barclay, joining us to do so. Mark Tooley, president of the Institute on Religion and Democracy and author of the book, Taking Back the United Methodist Church. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Yes, a pleasure to be with you again.
The Washington Post is talking about M. Barclay as a clergy person. The term deacon is one I think that probably needs some explanation. I think I've seen pictures of her in what I would recognize as kind of a pastoral clerical collar. What is a deacon in the United Methodist Church?
Well, they have many and most of the powers of a clergy person, but they're not fully recognized. They're not an elder of the church, so they're sort of an in-between, a lay person and an elder of the church. But they do have often fill in at local churches that don't have an elder to preside.
So they are, in many senses, the equivalent of kind of a what, not in a derogatory way, a lower rank of clergyman.
Essentially, yes.
So this story...
And don't have all the same educational requirements.
So the story of M. Barclay is one that has, didn't just start yesterday. It's actually a pretty long story. Can you tell us what it is?
Well, in short, she had, when she was previously living in Texas, had been on track to become a fully credentialed minister of the church, and essentially was denied that because she was professing to be an openly partnered, active lesbian at that point, which is in violation of church law, which requires that all clergy be celibate if single and monogamous in male-female marriage. So she was blocked in that route, and after that, she moved from being professing to be a woman lesbian to becoming someone who is not of either gender, but someone who transcends gender, and changed her name from Marianne to simply M, the letter M, and is no longer a she, but is a they or a them. And so in that capacity has moved to a more liberal jurisdiction, and so became a deacon in the Chicago area of Methodism, which has, of course, a very liberal bishop. And apparently M's full-time job is working for an LGBTQ advocacy group. So M is not working in a local church. So the bishop there and the supporters of M, in order apparently to make a statement, have elevated M to deacon.
Obviously, this is, as you have just said, an attempt to make some kind of political and theological statement. What is that statement, as well as you can translate it, that they're sending to the broader United Methodist Church?
Well, obviously, it is to promote the transgender idea and movement, which has a lot of cachet right now in our culture. So the denomination has not caught up with culture in that regard. There's no official church teaching or law regarding transgender, even the definition of gender per se. So we've just have been relying on common sense and tradition up until now. And so since she has said that she is not sexually active, there's no church law to prohibit her from being ordained and as a non-binary person who supposedly is neither male nor female.
But obviously, a church law aside, I mean, who can expect church law to be written that quickly when, you know, people's genders and the concept of gender changes, what, by the month in some cases?
Yes.
So,
and no, supposedly there are 50 or more genders now, and the number is always climbing.
How in the world does the United Methodist Church respond to this, given the fact that in previous cases, there have been cases of homosexual clergy who are non-celibate, and there's church law to cover that, as there are with heterosexual clergy who are non-celibate? What does the United Methodist Church do in cases like this?
Well, we're going to have to develop a church law on the definition of gender and sex. And in fact, I had submitted legislation on this some years ago, maybe 8 years ago, at our governing general conference. And at that point, it didn't go anywhere. But I suspect it's going to have to go somewhere at the next general conference, because it is a loophole. And M is not the first transgender clergy. There are one or two others out there.
When you submitted that legislation almost a decade ago, did some say that will never happen? You're simply being alarmist.
I suspect it died in a legislative committee, and I suspect it was not seen then as a pressing or compelling issue, even by those on the conservative side. But I think next time it will be acknowledged as a pressing issue. And this is so central to the gospel, the understanding of male, female, created by God, and how that relates to the order of creation overall. So it's not a minor thing, and the whole transgender concept is based on the premise that we each, as individuals, can create our own reality, and obviously that is not sustainable from a Christian perspective.
How would you describe the struggle that's going on, of which this case of M. Barclay and the many other that we have discussed here in past conversations are but symptoms or individual battlefields? How would you describe that?
Well, as you know, the whole transgender issue is simply part of a larger postmodern perspective that denies the existence of an objective reality and is hyper-individualistic and assumes that each person can create their own notion of reality that supposedly everyone else is compelled to affirm and accept, otherwise will be condemned for discrimination and marginalization. So it's a very insidious concept. It's not sustainable, and deep down everyone knows that it's illogical, much less at odds with historic Christian teaching. One does not need to be a Christian or a member of any traditional religion to see the problems with the transgender agenda.
And what do you expect will happen? The United Methodist Church, perhaps a little bit of a wake-up call on this particular issue of either transgenderism or, I don't know even how to classify this when someone says that they are genderless. M. Barclay simply says that she is queer. That's how she describes it. How do you expect the church to proceed?
Well, the church, the denomination is so consumed in the same-sex marriage and gay issue where the focus is, and a majority are for the Orthodox position, and that is prevailing. So it remains to be seen what is done by the liberal U.S. minority in a global denomination, whether they will try to split off or simply recede into a subculture or a combination of both. But obviously the transgender issue is related to that, and I suspect the Orthodox majority, who have sustained the church's traditional teaching about marriage and sexual ethics, will also inevitably add additional language and rules regarding our understanding of gender and sex, which liberals will loudly bewail but will be unable politically to stop.
Mark Tooley is president of the Institute on Religion and Democracy and author of the book, Taking Back the United Methodist Church. You can find out more about the Institute on Religion and Democracy at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Mark, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be our guest on the other side of the break, part 12 of our series on Christian devotion. We've been walking through 16th century reformer Martin Luther's fourfold strand of prayer, and we come to that third strand in the four, confession. We'll find out what confession is and isn't, and its place in Christian's devotional life and prayer right after the break.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilken and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Wildwood, Missouri is a proud sponsor of Issues Etc. And if you enjoy the relevant, Christ-centered teachings presented on this program, then you should come and join us at St. Paul's on Sundays at 9 a.m., where you will hear sermons that proclaim Jesus Christ and Him crucified for our sins, and enjoy in-depth Bible studies to help us grow as disciples. For more information, check us out at stpaullutheranwildwood.org.
Have you put off your decision to attend the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference to the very last minute? That's okay. You can still register for $80, but the registration fee won't include the meal plan. Register today at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. 618-223-8385. The fifth annual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 9th and Saturday, June 10th in Collinsville, Illinois.